Good morning and welcome to Unity Church. I want to extend a special welcome to those of you who are here for the first time. We hope you find Unity Church to be a place which helps you to find and keep your balance, a place which helps you to find, which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. I'd like to call your attention to This Week at Unity, which serves as an invitation and a roadmap to deeper involvement. Following the service this morning, we'll hope you'll join us for refreshments in the parish hall. There you can see new friends and old, peruse our excellent book stall, and visit the information tables. If you are interested in becoming a member of Unity Church, please visit the welcome table in the parish hall. Next week, Chico Hathaway will be preaching the sermon, The Religion of Work. There will be one service at 10 o'clock. Duncan Baird and I would like to greet you following the service at the Portland Avenue doors. And once again, welcome to Unity Church.
Thank you. Good morning. On this bright summer day, we meet here in this place of hope and inspiration to seek and reflect upon our own beliefs and highest values. The search must be, for each of us, an individual journey, but we can take joy and comfort in the knowledge that others are with us on that path. In this spirit, let us embark on that journey together. Our hymn is number 12. For the ingathering of nature and human nature.
It is a house of friendships, and hidden in trouble, and an open room for the incursion of our sorrow.
It is a house of freedom, guarding the dignity and worth of every person. Scientists can encourage devotion to their quest, where mystics can abide in a community of searchers.
It is a house of art, adorning its celebrations with melodies and handiworks.
It is a house of prophecy, outrunning times past and times present in visions of growth and progress. Every Sunday, we set aside time to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together, we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love and compassion, and witness which permeates this sacred place. One of the ways we do this is by lifting up the names of people we would like to bring into the sacred embrace of this gathered community. I'm happy to report that as of this morning, there are none for me to report on. So I invite you to share the names of those people you would like to celebrate, memorialize, or hold in the embrace of this community. For the words which have been spoken and the words which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, may we be ever grateful for the lives which have touched ours. A prayer. Mysterious presence, source of all, the world without, the soul within, may your spirit be with us this morning. May you bring us to understand that what we do here together is a seeking for reaffirmation of our own highest values and beliefs and for the courage to carry them out. Help us to see that true worship is not what we do here, but what we do as we encounter the world outside these walls, where values and beliefs are put to the ultimate test. Amen. Thank you.
How Everything Adores Being Alive by Mary Oliver. What if you were a beetle and a soft wind and a certain allowance of time had summoned you out of your wrappings? And there you were, so many legs, hardening, maybe even more than one pair of eyes, and the whole world in front of you. And what if you had wings and flew into the garden, then fell into the uptipped face of a white flower? And what if you had a sort of mouth, a lip, to place close to the skim of honey that kept offering itself? What would you think then of the world as, night and day, you were kept there, oh happy prisoner, sighing, humming, roaming that deep cup?
From T.S. Eliot, The Wasteland. The typist, home at tea time, clears her breakfast, lights her stove, and lays out food in tins. Out of the window, perilously spread, her drying combinations touched by the sun's last rays, on the divan are piled. At night, her bed, stockings, slippers, camisoles, and stays. I, Tiresias, old man with wrinkled dugs, perceived the scene and foretold the rest. I, too, awaited the expected guest. He, the young man carbuncular, arrives, a small house agent's clerk, with one bold stare, one of the low on whom assurance sits as a silk hat on a Bradford millionaire. The time is now propitious, as he guesses. The meal is ended. She is bored and tired, endeavors to engage her in caresses, which still are unreproved, if undesired. Flushed and decided, he assaults at once. Exploring hands encounter no defense. His vanity requires no response and makes a welcome of indifference. And I, Tiresias, have foresuffered all enacted on this same divan or bed. I too have sat by Thebes below the wall and walked among the lowest of the dead. Bestows one final patronizing kiss and gropes his way, finding the stairs unlit. She turns and looks a moment in the glass, hardly aware of her departed lover. Her brain allows one half-formed thought to pass. Well, now that's done. I'm glad it's over. When lovely woman stoops to folly and paces about her room again alone, she smooths her hair with automatic hand and puts a record on the gramophone. I was born in 1917, not a very good year, one in which it became clear that reasonable people were no longer in charge of things, and that the forces of history had taken charge and were going to move things forward by some massive but not understood cosmic force. It follows that I acquired my values and viewpoints in the period of the 1920s and early 30s, that strange interwar period. Now, after a long life, I find that I am sort of a strange shard from a former time protruding into the modern cultural landscape. Viewing this critically, numbers of persons have commented that I have a concrete mind, all mixed up and permanently set. However, perhaps a long life and a certain amount of experience will lend a little weight to my conjectures this morning. Perhaps you have experienced the same thing that I do from time to time. Gradually, a number of seemingly unrelated ideas swoop like bats through the vast open spaces of my mind until along comes some instance which acts like glue to cement these ideas together. This sequence has happened to me recently, and I am not entirely sure I have got it right just yet, and that the glue is completely set, but here it is in somewhat chaotic form. The critical event was my attendance at a reception at McAllister College, kicking off the establishment of an organization on the campus for the propagation of world citizenship. World citizenship? What is it? Surely a new concept, one rife with the speculation about why should there be a higher loyalty than the loyalty to one's country, a loyalty achieved only after a lot of bloody and human effort. We should remind ourselves that it was not an easy thing, for example, to amalgamate the fractious 13 colonies into a national state that undertook our nation's most dreadful war to eventually solidly cement that union. Thinking about this development, I was led to give some thought to the question of organizations generally. It is my view that something strange seems to be happening to traditional organizations. In some way, they seem to be unable to function as they used to function, or as they were designed to do. A prime example is the national state. No longer does it seem able to determine the cultural and economic conditions within its borders, as both the United States and Europe show. Perhaps they cannot control even their borders themselves. The traditional weapon of the traditional state, the military, while it still exists, seems somehow now inefficacious in many applications. A recent and cogent example of the failure of the nation state is the inadequate response of the government to the devastation done by Hurricane Katrina. As we viewed it from afar, it seemed that an inept government stumbled and fumbled its way through the whole affair, and we are quick to criticize the apparently feckless government agencies. But I ask myself whether in any case it could have been handled much better. Large governments with large and somewhat sclerotic government agencies are not designed to act quickly and effectively. So in many countries, voluntary organizations have taken over the functions of government. One can point here to Hamas in Palestine, before the recent election at least, or to the gangs which rule sections of Jamaican cities, or to the same situation in many developing countries, such as Pakistan. In other cases, the national state has come apart and resolved itself into constituent pieces. The British Isles now consist of Great Britain, the Irish Republic, a semi-independent Scotland, and a restive Wales. The former USSR has broken up into numerous independent countries. At the same time, that older broad kinds of political organizations seem to be falling apart or losing their powers, new broad organizations seem to be on the rise. For example, the modern global corporation, or an organization somehow different from the former international corporation, or for that matter, the object of world citizenship yet to be defined. Not the least among the casualties is the traditional family, the place of which is now taken by the single parent family, or an even more sinister pattern by the youth gang, prime examples of which are now a menace in North Minneapolis. The institution of marriage, the traditional prop of the family, has widely become irrelevant. So it seems that the role, function, powers, and shape of traditional organizations are changing, and in some cases, drastically. At this point, I should stop and cite two things which I feel should be factored into the structure which follows. First, there is Baird's Law of Balance. This is a rule which I stumbled on as a boy and have clung to ever since, in spite of Emerson's caution that consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds. It appears in various forms and disciplines of social science, where it has such names as relection toward the mean. It is a rule which posits a tendency for things to return to the average or the middle, to even out, as it were, or to see that those things which are in advance will be pulled back toward the average or will be overtaken. The next consideration is Baird's second law, which is that human beings are a herd animal and need the group to survive. As individuals, we will always seek to find our lives and identify an identity in the defining group. Baird's first law, if you are interested, is that beliefs are held with an intensity which is directly proportional to their unbelievability. Which may or may not be relevant here, but I pass it on anyway. A corollary of the second law is derived from the work of the British statesman and philosopher Edmund Burke. He is probably remembered by some of you as the guy in Parliament at the time of the American Revolution who came down on the side of the colonists. His point was that a society is so complex and interrelated that it is impossible for those of us who are in it to understand it and see what is truly going on. His argument was for incremental change, lest by our well-intentioned but misdirected efforts we do irreparable damage. He was looking, of course, at the French Revolution, which did exactly that and introduced into French life rifts and stresses which exist yet today. So while we seek to bring about social change on the assumption that it is going to result in good, we should be aware that deep down, beyond our ken, the societal tectonic plates are moving in ways that are inscrutable to us and which are going to produce changes we cannot predict or even imagine. It has been noted that long-range projections almost always are frustrated by unforeseen circumstances which change the whole situation. For example, who could have predicted in the summer of 1939 that Hitler and Stalin would enter into a pact? With the collapse or enervation of traditional groups, there's come a new development noted by social scientists, and this is what might be called atomization of the individual. I have spoken about this before, citing change from a pluralistic society to a particularistic one. A pluralistic society is typified by our sister church's society in Homerad St. Peter, where everybody knows everybody and you meet them in a variety of capacities. The guy next door to you is your neighbor, your brother-in-law, your fishing buddy, and your minister. Contrast this with the society we have today, where a high standard of material wealth has tended to lead people to a self-centered existence. Our next-door neighbor is just our next-door neighbor. We meet others in a one-dimensional way, as our dentist, our lawyer, our drugstore clerk. It has often been noted that there are no sidewalks or front porches in suburbia, but what is presented to the public is the bleak facade of the three-car garage. It has led us to seek satisfaction in the enjoyment of material things and gadgetry. A survey cited in a recent newspaper article shows that over 25% of American adults declare they have no other persons in whom they can confide. And another large chunk of the populace is in not very good shape on this either. This is indeed a challenging situation. Something of the situation of so many of these people is reflected in the reading this morning from T.S. Eliot, who so well captures the bleakness and purposelessness of life for someone cut off from the nourishing springs of surrounding social structures of a significant kind, and whose only recourse is to turn to the gramophone. This, then, the age of the imperial individual, the ultimate projection of the idealized individual of Emerson and Thoreau. I believe that the present-day individual has been characterized as a part of the me generation. I think we've heard that before. It seems to me now that the pressure of globalization, which are inevitable at this point in history, are now operating to validate Baird's law of balance. We no longer have the economic options we once had. Perhaps the clearest evidence of this tendency is the tragic fate of the American automobile industry, which once could grant wage increases and various generous fringe and benefits to its workers with the sure knowledge that the increased costs could be passed on to the customers. It is apparent to everyone that this is no longer a possibility, and the automobile industry, along with other major industries such as airlines, are now frantically trying to unburden themselves of their crushing benefit burdens. Outsourcing has become a household word and a threat to employees at all levels. But in spite of my prior warnings about our inabilities to anticipate the future, let's see if we can project some relative certainties and then draw some conclusions. This is generally referred to as connecting the dots. So as we stand here in the summer of 2006, what lies over the horizon? As we speculate about these things, we should all remember that eventually all costs are borne by individuals. If costs are initially passed off to corporations or to government bodies, these costs eventually come home to roost as higher prices for goods and services or higher taxes or both. The only question is, on whose roost are they going to land? First, we are all aware that the next few years will put heavy strains on the Social Security system with the advent of baby boomer retirees. There is no question but that as presently constituted, the system will go broke at some point down the line, although nobody seems quite sure just when. At the same time, nobody seems eager to take the actions which would help to stabilize the system. It is a third rail, as we usually say, and we saw recently the failure of President Bush's attempt to alter the system somewhat to give potential recipients a vested fund. We can be sure, though, that at some time in the relatively near future, we will all be compelled to come up with considerable gobs of dough. As if this were not enough, we have the ever-increasing cost of Medicare, now supplemented by the cost of the new drug program. It is a rule that any government program tends to expand in size and coverage. And with medical care now at some 14% of gross national product and rising, we can safely project that we'll have to come up with the scratch to cover these costs, and that these costs will increase as medical care takes a larger and larger percentage of our disposable income. To be noted are the current attempts of employers to drop or limit medical coverage for their employees, and the interesting development that in contract negotiations, many labor organizations are foregoing wage demands in favor of medical coverage. Then there's the matter of retirement. For most people, Social Security will not even come close to providing the kind of retirement that they deem necessary. At the same time, under the goad of globalization, employers are abandoning or pulling back on the provision of retirement benefits. The result is that millions of our citizens are going to have to make provision for their retirement out of current funds, a further drain on the family budget. And on top of all that, there is the present realization that a high school education is insufficient to provide the basis for anything but a low-paying job, which means parents are going to have to put aside funds to educate their children in a market where the costs are increasing more rapidly than inflation. Today, there is a demand that all students go to college, and while this is probably an impossible ideal, it certainly indicates a trend. One more dot to add to the above. With the advent of the massive economies of China and India on the world scene, the pressure on the cost of fundamental raw materials and energy is going to be reflected in much higher costs, not just for petroleum products, but for basic raw materials such as steel, copper, and other metals, all of which means higher costs for material products. Okay, enough already. I now suggest to you that these five factors are in the future going to put a heavy burden on the family income. And so it seems inevitable to me that our consumer society is going perforce to be dealt a blow, and we are prevented by the forces of globalization from expanding income to incorporate these costs as we've been able to do in the past. In short, our material standard of living, which traditionally has gone ever upward, is going to remain constant, or more likely, go down. If my information is correct, this trend is already happening. Looked at from another angle, it seems to me we are going to be compelled to find our satisfactions and identities in life much less than in the enjoyment of material things, and look somewhat more to those things which we might call spiritual or social. In other words, we will have to move somewhat from a material particularistic society to a less materialistic, universalistic society. We will have to become more like Homerad St. Peter. Perhaps relevant to the discussion here is the comment of C. Northcote Parkinson to the effect that expenditures rise to meet income. From my own vantage point of the early 20s, I can only hope that pants rise to meet shirts. It seems to me that Unity Church has in its latter days anticipated this trend and has taken steps to become more universalistic. In the past few years, we have opened up new pathways by which our members can deepen and broaden their interrelationships. As an example, there's the institution of Wellspring Wednesday, which has been so successful. I most sincerely hope that all of us can put our minds to discover other ways to bring ourselves together in life-enriching ways. Anybody familiar with this congregation knows that it contains a very broad and deep spectrum of talents, which, I hope, can be exploited. In short, I would hope that Unity Church will continue on its course to move in to fill the gap in our lives left by the faltering organizations and economic arrangements of the present order. Let us thoroughly expand what we proclaim ourselves to be, the loving and embracing community in which we can all find comfort, companionship, and identity and confirmation of our highest ideals. May it be so. Our hymn is number S30. courage steel our wills, and the love of truth forever guide us.